Well, good afternoon. It's 2 p.m. on Wednesday, August 6, 2014. We're in City Hall in Plymouth, California. On this tape, you'll hear the stories of John Edgar Colbin and his family. And first, John, I want to thank you for participating. We've got a list of questions. We'll do it in 55-minute segments. And people 100 years from now are going to know about your family, and they won't have to look in a book. And hopefully we got it all digitized, and it'll be a good record. And I forgot to tell you, we'll give you a CD for your own, so you'll have it for yourself. So, okay, I'll quit talking. It's the Colburns. I've heard of the Colburns since I've lived here, and I remember, was it the Rexall drug in Ione?
Right.
Was your father or your grandfather?
No, my father.
Your father, right. Yeah. Well, I guess, how did the Colburns end up in Amador County?
My dad came from Jamestown, New York in 1911 by train. His memory of that was the first time he'd ever had Fig Newtons. And going through the sign when they got in California in Modesto that says health, wealth, and water.
Yeah. That sign's still there, I think, isn't it? A new version of it.
That's what he remembered. But he was raised in Turlock. He grew up sweeping floors in a pharmacy.
So he was a small child when he came?
Yes, he was like six.
Oh, man. What an adventure coming on the train.
Five or six. They had had other uncles out here prior to that in Turlock. So he swept floors in a pharmacy and worked his way up through high school, and decided with the assistance of the pharmacy he worked at to go into a pharmacy. So he went to school in Southern California. I came back. His first job was in San Francisco. He liked that very much, but then he ended up in Tracy for a while, and he ended up in Atwater. In Atwater, in the pharmacy, he was next door to the telephone office, and my mom worked in the telephone office. My mom had polio when she was 5 years old, and she was crippled for her whole life, you know. And so she walked on crutches.
She had those big old stainless steel braces, too, that some people
had. That was mostly in a later date. She had corrective surgery back in the 50s. And when they put braces on her, she didn't have braces prior to that. And so he got to know the lady working in the telephone office next door. And they fell in love and got married. The crazy thing about their marriage was she and her sister got married in a double wedding. And they both married Colburns. There's never been a tie that we could find between the two Colburns. And that was in a town of Atwater that was smaller than Plymouth at the time. Probably smaller than
it's not a very big town now. But her sister's boyfriend, his surname was Colburn.
Yeah.
And you had to think we are got to be related somewhere. Yeah. But no,
No, never have been able to find anything. He actually came out of the Dakotas. North Dakota or South Dakota. So, and my grandpa, my mom's dad, his family came in 1860s, the lower route across through Texas, New Mexico, and Arizona by wagon train, and they actually were attacked by Indians and lost a few of their members.
Mm-hmm.
The father fled the East because of the Civil War. He had been in it and got injured, and he had kids that were 10 or 12 years old, and he didn't want them to have to go out to war. So he came west. And they actually brought a black slave with them that they had. And they got here, they turned him loose, and they gave him freedom, and he took their name. So we always talked about having a black uncle in the family. But then they moved. They had brought horses with them. They traded those horses for 80 acres of land in Visalia. And then they started raising cattle, and they acquired more land. And
were they farmers and ranchers back where they came from?
Yeah.
Okay.
And my grandpa Hines, he was in the butcher shop business with his cousin in Visalia, and then they split up, and so he looked for a place.
Hines was his.
Yeah.
What was his first?
Peter Hines.
Peter Hines. H-I-N-E-S?
H-I-N-D.
H-I-N-D. Hind. Okay.
Yeah.
Peter Hind. Just in case somebody's looking for him someday, we'll have cleared it up for him a little bit.
And so he built a butcher shop, and he bought and sold cattle, and he did real well in Atwater. I would say he was probably wealthy in the terms then, because he spent a lot of time taking my mom to the University of California, San Francisco, back and forth on a monthly basis. And she spent a lot of time in
to get treatments for her polio.
Yeah.
Did she have to go in an iron lung a certain amount of time?
They didn't have iron lungs back then.
They didn't even have that yet.
No. And interesting enough, when she was in the University of California, San Francisco, she had polio when she was 5, but I think she was about 11 in there for treatments. And they had Ishi, the last Indian.
Yeah.
North. And he was staying in a tent, but he became good friends with my mom. He couldn't speak English at the time, and he could communicate with her. He lived on the grounds at UC Hospital.
Okay.
And he pushed her all over the hospital everywhere. Ishi visited her up here several times later. He became a big figure, and they had him in the World's Fair, and they kind of exploited him. But anyway. My grandpa, having the meat market, they had a cold storage in the bottom, and they would bring ice in the winter and hang the meat down at the bottom. And he went down one night to check on the meat, and an oil liner turned over on him and caught the place on fire and burned half of that water down.
Wow.
But anyway, my mom was raised there.
Your mother's name, John? I'm sorry, I should have got that.
Marie. My mom's name was Marie Therese Coburn.
And her maiden name was?
Hines.
She's Hines. H, okay. Marie Therese?
Yeah.
Okay, no Teresa, just Therese.
No, Therese.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
On her mother's side, the family came, there were two sisters in Ireland. And in one of their famines over there, a potato famine or something in the 1880s, they got passage to New York. And they worked through New York long enough to get passage to Panama. And then they walked across the isthmus of Panama and got passage to San Francisco. The one sister became a nun, and she was very active in the activities there. In 1906, in the earthquake, she was tending to the injured at Golden Gate Park,
mm-hmm.
and she got pneumonia from working so much, many hours. She got pneumonia and died. The other sister married a clerk, and that would be my great-grandpa Clark. He was a building contractor in San Jose and in the 1880s and up through like 1910. He built most of all the buildings for San Jose Teachers College, which is now San Jose State. Yeah, so.
And his last name was Clark?
Clark, yeah. So.
And his first. I knew I was going to.
You're going corner me there.
If it comes back, we'll go ahead.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Anyway, he was a very private man, and he fell off some scaffolding and got a concussion. And back then they didn't do much for concussions, and he died. And he'd had his very private person, and his wife didn't know what he had or the dealings or anything, but there was always a Chinese Oriental box, big box on a mantle there, on their house. And they lived next to Mondavi, I believe it was, from San Jose. Two houses. So they always had liquor, because they made brandy. They always had liquor on holidays all during the probation.
Mm-hmm.
And but anyway, when he died, my mom, of course, was going back and forth to San Jose and then to the hospital in San Francisco. She was there one time with my grandmother, and they went to the store and they came back, and Grandma just got through burning all the papers in that box. They have no idea. It was all his stocks, all his everything.
And deeds to property and
he
all.
He was investing in utilities.
Oh!
One of the things he had that they had talked about, he owned a square city block in downtown Portland. He had a lot of mining stocks and utility stocks, which he burnt the whole thing up. So we never know what kind of a fortune it
was there.
And Grandma Clark burned up. Anyway, so Mom and Dad got married, and he had an offer on a job in Mariposa and to share in the profit from the store. That was Radonovich, and Radonovich went on to become Congressman Radonovich, just retired a few years ago. Not that Radonovich, but one of the sons.
Yeah, that family.
Yeah. Okay. So, my two sisters and one brother were born in Mariposa, when they lived in Mariposa. So he was over there 6 or 7 years. His profit sharing wasn't working out, so he decided he wanted to be in business himself. He liked the small town. He wanted to be there. He liked the fact that you knew people and you could help people out, and you could, you know, you had communication with the people and you knew who they were. And he talked to some salesmen, and they told him about the pharmaceutical salesman. They said, well, there's a drugstore in Plymouth that is up for sale. So he came from Mariposa and looked at the store, and it looked good and everything. He looked at the bank account, the guy, the revenues that the guy was depositing in his bank. And he ended up buying a store here. And it was a store with a greenhouse behind it. But we called it the greenhouse. It wasn't a greenhouse. The paint color was green.
Mm-hmm.
And it was downstairs was a kitchen, a living room. Upstairs was...
So he could live right on site? Is
yeah,
that?
Three bedrooms.
Yeah.
And they were adjoined. He then found out that the guy that he bought the place was doctoring the books. He would deposit his daily deposit, and then every afternoon he'd go withdraw $50, and then he'd add that to the pot and then deposit the next day. So he was starting from a business that really didn't have much at all. But through it all, that was in 1937, and he met, I believe it was Senator Perovich. I could be wrong on that. It was a state senator. And he says, Harold, you know there's funds available for fares from Parametric Racing. And all you have to do is get a list of potential directors together and get your list into the governor, and they'll appoint a fare board and the directors. So, Dad, I think he talked to the governor about it.
But he had no prior experience with fairs or?
Nothing, no.
No. And he was fairly new in town then.
Yeah, and he was a young man. He was still like 28 or 29.
Yeah.
And he was new in town, so he thought, well, let's see what we can do about getting a fair going and getting a. And they'd had somewhat of a fair in Iowa prior to that.
Yeah, I read that history.
And so he went on a mission to get board members, and he tried to get a balance of board members throughout the county, and he couldn't get much interest from Cedar Creek Jackson. Got a little bit of interest from my own. And I think there was a couple of fair board members from my own. There might have been one, or might have been a Bono or someone from Jackson. But in the process of searching for board members, he would visit the drugstores. That's a common place for him to go. You know, go to the other drugstores and see, talk about
shop talk. Yeah,
yeah. Who's might be interested in your community? And he would go down to Ione and where the pizza factory is there now.
Yeah.
That big brick building.
Yeah.
Was the pharmacy there, and I want to say Gilliam, but that's not the right name. It was Gilliam was the general store that was next to it. But anyway, my mom would sit out in the car because it was easier for her, and his wife would come out and talk to my mom. And about the third trip down there, wife came out and she says, "Marie, my husband sure likes Harold. We've talked a lot, and he's getting up in his age. And he said if anything ever happened to him, he wanted Harold Coburn to have this store." And he just had the other store about a year and a half, new store, trying to make it go, trying to make a business go.
Was it a Rexall?
It wasn't at that time.
Okay. They were all independent pharmacists?
Yeah. Rexall came on.
I don't know why I remember. Believe, it's an orange and blue sign, if I remember.
Yeah, I believe it was. Maybe during the war, shortly after the Rexall company founded.
Okay.
And it was more like a product distributor like Western Family grocery stores. And that you could buy aspirin and all your products through them.
Right.
At much, a discounted rate.
Yeah.
So anyway, shortly after the wife told him that, he died. And so she came to my dad, and he said, "Well, man, I can't put up any money for a new store." And she made him a deal he couldn't refuse. So that's how he ended up with two drugstores. He was on search for a member for the fair board.
Fair board.
Yeah. And so anyway, he got the fair going here, and he still had contacts from Mariposa, you know, and they'd go back there and visit all their friends. And he talked to them about what he was doing here as far as the fair, and actually got them started on their fair.
Right, because the Ione before that was just a loose conglomeration of the farmers. It was more like a family picnic than a... It wasn't an organized government-run district agricultural association.
Yeah, there was no...
There was none of that
before. No state funding or anything.
So that was the start of that whole...
Yeah, and what happened, the reason they picked the site here in Plymouth was that Dietert deeded them the land. So the first 10 acres that they had there was given to them by Dietert.
Yeah, like our park in Jackson.
Yeah. And so that was, you know, why the fair got located here, because of the land. But, you know, the first fair was very successful, and that created interest for Bedside County. Some of those first fair board members only served 1 year. And, and then there were others appointed. So that's how he got involved in affairs. He was very well liked. And at that time, they used to, his drugstore and fountain was kind of the community center where people came to sit down and talk shop and whatever. And one of the guys that used to come in there on a monthly basis, he came up by stage from San Francisco, was Jimmy Lavaggi. And Jimmy Lavaggi had the big building next to the bank here, the big brick building.
Does it have his name on it? I've seen that name around.
The Lavaggi store.
Yeah.
They were like, they were very wealthy. They were in the mercantile business, you know, and that's who was making money during the gold mine, which guys would sell them picking shovels.
Mm-hmm.
And they did awfully well, you know, like the Sirocco's and the hardware store people in that time. He then went to San Francisco and was in the finance business and was quite well off in San Francisco. But he'd come up here. He was a director of the Bank of Amador. And that was the first Bank of Amador.
The original one.
The original one, yeah. He was a director or one of the owners in Bank of Amador. And so he'd come up for these monthly meetings, and after a year or so, he'd come up, and his house was the big colonial that is across from the hotel now, that my brother Gary has.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That was Lavaggi's house?
It was Lavaggi's home.
Huh.
And so he's in there one day, and he says, Harold, he says, you got all these kids. And he says, I have this big house over here I use once a month. He says, why don't you just buy my house from me? And there again, he made out my dad a deal he couldn't refuse, and so he ended up with a house.
You said all those kids.
Yeah. And
how many siblings do you have?
There's five of us.
Okay. Well, you and Gary.
My brother Hal. I was the youngest, and then Gary. And then my brother Harold Colburn Jr.
Okay.
And then my sister, Nan Wolf Colburn. And my sister Marla Marino Colburn.
Okay.
Yeah. And
so is it just you and Gary now left? Or
no, they're all still alive.
They're all of them? Okay.
Yeah, all still alive.
And live fairly close?
No, Gary and I live, Marla live here in Plymouth, and my sister Nan lives in Turlock, which is kind of unique because that's where my dad started out.
Yeah.
And my oldest brother, Harold Jr., is in the state of Washington. He's been up there for 40 years.
Okay.
So anyway, they bought the house there, and then they all of a sudden had a bedroom for each kid. And there were six bedrooms in that place.
Yeah.
That building was built in the 1860s by the Caucasian Society. The Caucasian Society was a lodge group, like the Masons or anyone else.
Yeah.
It was a lodge group that was organized to discriminate against the Orientals. And the Orientals had a lot of general stores at that time, the Chinese stores they called them.
Yeah, right.
And so the Caucasian Society formed. They built a general store downstairs and a lodge hall upstairs. And it's actually got in the one side of the house at that time, the hall, it has two sets of stairs that go up and are about 20 feet at the top, meeting each other, one for front, one for back. We have pictures of that house from up at the Catholic Church, where it didn't have the
lodge in front of it at the time.
It didn't have the cornucopia on the corner. Of
oh,
it. Yeah, the tower and all that was added later. The Caucasian Society lasted about 20 years, maybe 25 years. They disbanded and they're basically the forerunners in Native Sons of California. And many of them were startup members of the Native Sons.
Mm-hmm.
So then it was converted into a home in the 1890s. And then the Lavaggi family had it. When we got it, when I was kids, and I think probably still some of it is there, they had gas lines along the ceiling. And in the early days of electricity, it wasn't that dependable. And we're in hospitals especially, they had electricity and gas. And we have some fixtures in there that are dual fixtures. They're gas, electricity. So electricity wasn't dependable. It'd go off, you'd have gas lights.
Huh.
Where you'd see those in a hospital, and that's the only other place I've ever seen.
Yeah.
So Yeah, it's mostly redwood. 10-foot ceilings downstairs, 11-foot ceilings upstairs. And insulated with sawdust. But that's quite a house.
Now, you say five siblings, were they all born in Amador County? Or?
No, three were born in Mariposa.
In the Mariposa era, and then yeah. You and Gary up here?
Yeah.
With midwives, or?
I was actually born in the hospital in Merced because my mom's family lived in Atwater at the same time.
Okay.
And because of her health of her leg, they went down and stayed with her mom. Gary was born in Sutter Hospital in Sacramento. And I think my two sisters and brother were born in a hospital in Merced, which was the hospital for Atwater.
Mm-hmm.
So, my dad was very, very well liked, very astute in politics. And
was he ever a supervisor?
He was supervisor for three terms.
That was a leading question. I thought I knew that, but
not all consecutively. In 1948, I believe it was. They didn't have a hospital here. The hospital had closed. The old hospital that they remodeled where the DA is now.
Mm-hmm.
It was closed. The only hospital was Preston School for a period of time. So they got together petitions, and in order to get a hospital, you had to go through a state commission. And my dad... they put together petitions countywide and then went down to Los Angeles to appear before this hearing for the board. And I remember it was Gorman, I believe, and George Salzman.
Charlie Gorman,
yeah.
The Ford dealer?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And George Salzman and some other business guys in went down to that.
Like Hoffman CB or...
Yeah, I don't remember the whole group. But anyway, they decided they wanted to go touring, sightseeing in Los Angeles and Beverly Hills and everything. And my dad says, I'm going to take the time and I'm going to go up and listen. And they were supposed to have their hearing at like 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Dad says, I want to go up and listen to the other presenters and see how they make their pitch.
See what works and what doesn't.
Yeah, and we'll see what happens. So he was up there, and they had finished quite early before lunch, and so they asked him who he was, and he said he was Harold Colburn from Amador County. And, of course, they'd had the paperwork and the petitions all prior. And they said, well, Harold, we got some time here. Why don't you talk to us now? And he says, well, I'm waiting for the rest of my people to get here before I would make a presentation. He said, well, why don't you go ahead and talk, and then when they get here at 3 o'clock, we'll take your item up again. And they said, we can't believe that the signature you got for the amount of population in the area. And they asked him, you know, what is the actual population of Amador County? And I think they had like 40% of the people signed these petitions.
Wow.
So Dad told them all about it and their needs and everything, and they said, well, we were really firmly convinced that you need this grant and you need a hospital. We don't need to continue this hearing at 3 o'clock based on what you have presented to us.
You convinced us.
We're going to fund your hospital. So Dad was, you know, started to fare, was involved with the hospital and everything, and a very active statewide also. In 1950, Goodwin Knight, who was a good friend of my dad's, he was a lieutenant governor. And Earl Warren was a governor. Earl Warren was going to step down, not run for governor, so that he could run for vice president of the United States.
In the 52 election?
Yeah.
Okay.
So Governor, Lieutenant Governor Knight was stepping up to run for governor. And he talked my dad into running for lieutenant governor in 1950. So dad signed up to run for governor, and in the meantime...
Or lieutenant governor.
Lieutenant governor. And in the meantime, they'd been having the McCarthy hearings and all that, and Nixon had got his initial stuff.
Yeah.
With all that...
Made a name for himself.
All that craziness that was going on, fighting communists, you know.
Yeah.
It was a nightmare. But anyway, they convinced Earl Warren, if he wouldn't try to run for vice president, would let Nixon run with Eisenhower, that they would give him the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court because it was coming up for appointment.
Yeah, that's a pretty good plum.
Yeah. So he stepped back and he had to run for governor again. So then...
Oh, because of the time lapse.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Because Nixon and they didn't go until 56, is that correct?
No, 52.
52.
Yeah. So he stepped back and ran for governor, and then Lieutenant Governor Goodwin Knight had not signed up for governor yet, but my dad had already signed up for lieutenant governor, and Goodwin Knight stepped back to run for lieutenant governor, so my dad was stuck with running for lieutenant governor against the guy that talked him into running. And Dad campaigned throughout the state as Coburn the Country Boy. I can remember he had a brand new 1950 Oldsmobile station wagon. Coburn the Country Boy painted on it.
Were you old enough to go with him, John?
Very few times. I would have been 10.
Yeah, pretty small. But the local things you probably went to with him, yeah.
But Coburn the Country Boy, yeah, we got pictures of us when he was campaigning on the courthouse steps in Jackson, the whole family. So then he came back and he was a supervisor for a term or two. And I believe he got to know Swiftberry, who was a state senator. And Berry's was in the lumber industry classroom.
Yeah, when they have, is that the Berry Sawmill and Oboe Ranch?
That was a different Berry.
That was the Berry's from Jackson and Frank Berry.
Yeah.
So they were no relation.
I don't believe so.
Okay.
So anyway, he was stepping down, talking Daddy to run for Senate. And at that time, Begovich came out of World War II as a big war hero. And I don't know just exactly what he was doing. Oh, I think he was Veterans Affairs officer, and then he became judge.
Right.
And so they had their caucus, to see who was going to run a Democratic ticket for Senate. And the people wanted the young up-and-coming Begovich. So my dad got beat up by Begovich for the endorsement. So he stepped down.
That was back before the redistricting, or it was one senator for each county?
I believe there was a senator for every two counties.
Every two counties, yeah, there was.
Yeah, I think there was 26 senators. So then he was on the Board of Supervisors. He was on the Board of Supervisors in the 50s, I believe, for two terms. He was on there, and he was the one that talked the county into buying the Uruguay ditch from the Garibaldis. And he was also on there with when East Bay was trying to build Comanche Dam. And East Bay had to get agreements with Calaveras County, San Joaquin County, and Amador County. But what it did was gave them, East Bay was trying to buy the majority of the water off the McColony, the water rights. And I believe the county had somewhere in excess of 80,000 acre feet. My dad had it opposed for a year and a half, maybe. It was a 3-2 vote. And he thought they ought to get more money and they ought to get more water out of it.
Well, he wasn't against the project, he was against the deal.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. No, he wasn't against the project. So then Supervisor Cooper from Ione, he had a general store down there where right across the corner from my dad's store where the sandwich place is there now.
Clark's Corner?
Clark's Corner.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was Cooper's general, the grocery store. He switched his vote. I was in a drugstore about 6 weeks later, and Bob Lang, who was assistant general manager for East Bay, came in and talked to my dad. And Dad got to know him through the negotiation over the year and a half. And he was, you know, the one that was trying to get an agreement with the counties. He says, "Harold, I'll never know why you guys settled for $2 million. He says, "Our budget was public information, and we had budgeted $8 million. And we were ready to go to $13.5 million. And the county sold the water rights and caught the McColony for $2 million.
Yeah.
And so my dad said, "Well, this isn't really, this is a sign that the Board of Supervisors should not be in the water business. We need an agency here in Amador County that deals with water, water issues and water." And so he went and got the formation, its actual state formation of the Amador County Water Agency.
As it exists today.
Yeah. So he was the one that actually got the water agency going. So he was quite involved.
Wow, I guess.
And countywide.
And working full time to boot.
Yeah, and he was working 9 to 9. He had the store in Ione open, and he'd hire pharmacists so he could do his meetings and stuff, nights and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But we saw very little of Dad when we were growing up because he was busy 9 to 9. We'd see him after 9 o'clock when he'd get home. On a lot of those occasions, Martin Yurovich, Lucy Yurovich, and Pete Yurovich owned a place in Nashville. And they had boarders from the mine down there in Nashville, and when it closed, they bought the Plymouth Hotel. And then when Pete died in the 50s, my dad would stop in and talk to Lucy almost every night and check on her.
Huh.
On his way home.
Yeah.
And see how she was doing. So, yeah, we did a lot of vacations. We would go back there right after the war. Being that my mom's family was from Atwater, they were very familiar with Yosemite, and we'd go to Yosemite and camp for 2 or 3 weeks every summer with all the cousins and stuff.
Oh, wow.
My mom first went into Yosemite in, like, 1913 on a mule or burro. And at that time, there wasn't any road in from Mariposa. You had to go in from either Big Oak Flats or from...
up on top?
Yeah.
What, Pine Mountain Lake and that way?
Yeah, she went up there in a Model T, and then they got a burro that took them down the trail into Yosemite.
Huh.
So, Yeah, so we had a great time in Yosemite.
Yeah, that's an unbelievable place to this day.
Yeah. We were there for 2 weeks, and of course we hiked all those major trails. Had a great time in Yosemite. But, Dad was involved in a lot of startup here.
So the pharmacy in Plymouth, he just hired someone to run that, or did he let that go? And
yeah, he had a pharmacist here called Quisenberry. And Quisenberry was up in his age, so my dad, they built an addition on that house, which was another bedroom on the first floor.
On the greenhouse?
No, on the house.
Okay.
And Quisenberry had that, and then later after Quisenberry left, that was my mom and dad's master bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
Not very big, but it was their bedroom. And then my mom collected antiques when it wasn't fashionable. They had unbelievable stuff in there. Bedroom sets worth $40,000 to $50,000 today.
But your mom never worked in the pharmacy or the.
Oh yeah, she would work in the store some.
She did work some.
Yeah.
Okay.
I remember seeing her sliding along on the floor stocking shelves, we had to do inventory every year, you know, in the store for income tax, see what mm-hmm. how much stuff they actually had on stock when it came time the first year to pay your income tax. So, yeah, Mom and they had, like I said, they had sandwiches and all that. And, of course, he had the same thing in Ione. My dad was so well-liked in Ione, at his funeral, it was a driving rainstorm here. And they had his funeral there in the hall in
Ione? He's buried?
At the fairgrounds.
Oh, I would think so. That's why I was going to...
Yeah, he had a funeral at the fairgrounds. And that place was packed, wall-to-wall, standing room only, in a driving rainstorm. He had... Over half the people there were from Ione, because he was that well liked in Ione,
mm-hmm.
so respected as a businessman. He had lawyers that were trying to get over here from Reno, got stuck in a rain and snowstorm.
Just couldn't make it.
And the big name water attorneys, Adolf Mosovich, Mark McDonough, those were the head names in water attorneys in Sacramento. Brought his funeral. So it was an amazing man.
When did he pass on, John?
In 1986.
So he lived a full life then?
Yeah.
What, he would be 82?
Can't
do the math real quick.
Yeah, I think he was born in 06. '06.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I went by, you said he came in 11 on the train, and he was 5 or 6.
Yeah.
So I was doing the math backwards a bit.
And to show you how he got involved in things, he had a friend in visiting Merced and Atwater. Met a pharmacist down there and had a store. And he passed away. At that time, there was a few startups like Payless Drugs had just started up, and Thrifty had started up. And so they had an auction of his pharmacy. And my dad went down to protect the widow to see if they didn't steal the pharmacy and get the bid up. He ended up won the bid, trying to keep the price up for her.
He wanted to finish second, but he finished first.
Yeah, he finished first, so he ended up with the drugstore in Merced. So for a period of time, probably 10 years, he had three drugstores. But it was a pretty interesting, and all his kids worked in the stores, I remember.
Sweeping floors, docking shelves, and all that.
So did Jerk. I was just soda jerk, making milkshakes and and fountain drinks and sandwiches and stuff. And at the time, I was in his, I built fixtures for him, and I was pretty industrious as a kid. I built fixtures for him in the Ion store. I spent a lot of time in the store, but I was in the store all the time, day or night. You know, I had keys to the store and everything. Never once crossed my mind to get any of the drugs in the pharmacy. It didn't even occur to me. You know, and now all those drugs are super locked up in here.
Yeah. Did it ever occur to you to become a pharmacist?
Well, I out of
or either you or your other two brothers?
My brother Hal is a pharmacist.
Oh, he is?
Yeah.
Lives in Washington?
Yeah.
Okay.
My brother Hal was very involved in FFA, and he was going to go to Davis for a while, but he had, I don't know, he must have had 20, 25 head of cattle when he was going to go to college, and he thought, well, I think he did a semester at Davis, and he thought, well, you can't make any money in the cattle business. We're trying to buy a herd, 25 cows and building your way. You got to have some land to do your business on. And so he decided to go in the Army. And when he came out, he decided to go to pharmacy school.
So he went in. Was it peacetime or wartime when he went in?
It was between Korea and Vietnam.
Okay.
Yeah. He would have graduated in 55.
So right after Korea. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So he went in the Army, and I think they were, I think he was drafted. I think they still had to draft him. And he came out and he went to University of Utah because they had a four-year pharmacy program where everything in California was 5 years. And he went there and got his pharmacy degree, and then he came out, worked in Sacramento for several years, and then found a ranch up in Spokane, or above Spokane, Coosie, Washington, that was available, and he went up on a trip to visit some people. So he ended up buying a ranch up there and started back in the cattle business from what he had earned from being a pharmacist. But when I out of high school, I went to University of Nevada.
I was going to start that. You went to Plymouth Elementary?
Yeah. Went to Plymouth Elementary. Went, like I said, the first two grades was in the Quonset hut.
I heard your daughter was in earlier if you weren't here.
And then they had...
She asked you if you remembered it, and you go, remember it? I froze to death in there or something like that.
Yeah. We, and then they had two classes of three grades.
It was
three
so walk grades. To school every day, huh? Rain or shine.
And the first and second was in the Quonset hut, and then the second, third, and fourth was in one room, and fourth, fifth, or fifth, sixth. The first and second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, and eighth was in a separate room.
Then high school, you went to Sutter Creek?
I went to Sutter Creek.
On the bus, or did you have to figure out your own way to get over there?
No, we went by bus until, I think I might have had a car in my senior year.
Okay.
Yeah. But we used to ride the bus, and that was entertaining.
And you graduated from what year was that of high school, John?
58.
58, okay.
When I graduated from grammar school, there was only six in our class. But one of the advantages of being in the old schoolrooms where you had one through eight or multiple grades is that the kids could really advance on their own because you'd be hearing the stuff that was being taught to the, if you were in fifth grade, you'd hear what's going on in the sixth and seventh and eighth grade.
You pick up some just by osmosis.
Yeah. And so I talked to a lot of scholars that always felt that it was a big mistake when they started consolidation of all those unifications of the schools. because they didn't get the hands-on that they had before.
Which happened in Emmeter County not long after 58, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Like 1960 or 61?
Yeah. Yeah, went in unified and closed the River Heights Central School, Chatterer School, Spittle Mountain School, Will Springs School, consolidated all of those. And then they kind of outgrew the school up in where it is up here. And so the school board was, my dad was on the school board for 20 years.
Wow.
The school board was looking for a spot, and my dad suggested, well, why don't you build it next to the fairgrounds, and you can use the facilities of fairgrounds as part of the school. You know, you could use the main building for basketball and activity, and you could share, you know, the space. And they said, well, Harold, the only property that's available is that piece that Ike Long has. And Ike Long was an old Indian gentleman who lived there, and he had where the grammar school is now. And they said, and Ike, you know, he's set in his ways. He don't want to sell. And they said, well, my dad said, would anybody ever ask him? And they said, no. And he says, well, I'll go talk to Ike Long. So Dad went down and talked to Ike Long. Ike says, well, Harold, he says it's for the kids. I'll give you this place.
The property where the school is now?
Yeah. All you have to do is find me another place to live. So they bought him a little house over here next to the Methodist Church. And Ike Long deeded that property to the school.
Wow.
And and part of that was out of respect for my dad, you know.
I kind of read between the lines.
Ike was an old Indian gentleman. I think he was buried in the cemetery up here, but he had a cousin or something that was Archbishop Senior Long in Stockton. They used to come up here and visit annually a cemetery, a whole Indian cemetery that was out here.
Did they preserve it when they did?
No, they. There's some markings out there, but very little.
Okay.
The city of Burke Ranch, when they were building that, put a road through it, and they had to go try to salvage the artifacts and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But Ike Long, Senior Long, and none of those people are involved at all with the Ion Band, who thinks that this is their aboriginal ground here.
Yeah.
On the current scheme of things. You know, these Indians that are trying to get a casino here in Plymouth didn't have anything to do with this area.
Yeah.
And you would not have had a big tribe or settlement on top of a ridge here. You know, water goes to Dry Creek and goes to Consumnes River. In the summertime, you'd have to walk 3 or 4 miles to get a drink of water.
Yeah.
Right. You know.
That's just common sense.
Yeah. The most of the settlements were down by the rivers.
All right. Well, we got a few minutes on this session. We got you out of Sutter Creek High School, was it called then, or was it Ham?
And then I went to University of Nevada. I decided I was going to go into nuclear physics. And
really?
Did a semester, I was carrying 19 units. I was going great good. I was making it, you know, being able to keep my grades up and stuff. And I joined a fraternity up there. It was downhill from then on.
Well, I think you told me one day out in front of Pokerville Hall that you ran for the Student Senate.
Yeah.
At
University of Utah.
Yeah. Well, that was it. Okay, yeah. Go ahead.
So I decided, well, I wasn't going to make it nuclear.
No, and be a fraternity member.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and they talked me into going to the University of Utah. So I went back there for a year. And, of course, it was all Mormons back there.
But your brother, Hal, had already been, school?
Yeah, he had graduated.
Yeah, okay.
So Yeah, that was interesting back there with being a Catholic boy and a Mormon.
Yeah.
And it was, we'd argue with, we'll argue religions with them all day long, you know, or all night long. And, I don't know whether I told you this story, but I'll repeat it. The guy that was there in the dorm with us was a junior, and he was head of the debate team for the college there. He's a Greek kid, and there was a Jewish kid who was also there that was good friends of ours. They decided I ought to run for sophomore senate. Well, I was unknown on the campus, with the exception of maybe 50 people in the dorm and around, and a mm-hmm. few people in my classes. They decided I was going to run. So anyway, we had to give speeches to the different fraternities and sororities and to the student body and all that. I was always sick. And this guy from the debate team was always giving me a speech. And he could almost make you cry. You know?
Oh, okay.
And so many of the times I was so unknown, I was in the audience. You know, I was supposed to be home sick. I was in the audience.
And he was giving the speech as John Colbert?
Yeah, he was giving the speech in place of me because I couldn't make it that
Yeah.
But then we also, we did a thing just on name recognition. And we had these, you were allowed to sign a maximum sign 3 foot by 5 foot or whatever. And you could only have like 25 signs. So we made these giant JONs, you know, the uniqueness of John with no agent.
Yeah.
And we had these giant paper mache signs that were square, block, which each sign is a, each letter is a sign, you know, so we were under the count on those. We had these great big JONs, and we would move them almost nightly from one spot on campus to the other, you know, and it was just strictly named placement, John. There were two off of the seats for sophomore senate, two senate seats, and we were going after everybody's second vote. So because you got to work for two people. So then I came up with this idea. I says, "Well, let's build these outhouses," and we made cardboard outhouses with shake roofs and the whole thing, and we put our John JONs for everyone.
That's the story you told me.
Yeah. We got more votes in that election than the student body president did.
Yeah, that's the story you told me. Won on a landslide and didn't know a soul when the campaign started. All right, well, we are at a quick break, so when we come back, we're going to talk about the Arroyo Ditch and John Colbert in politics. Bear with us. And we're back with John Colbert. I told him his college career was over. He goes, no, he wanted to go back before that. So, John?
Well, I tell my grandkids that I'm the only kid in the history of Plymouth Grammar School that was president of second grade class 3 years in a row. Of course, they get a big kick out.
Yeah.
I started grammar school when I was four. It's before they had preschools.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't even have a kindergarten set at first, second grade. So in the second grade, my mom decided that I was too young for the rest of the kids and better hold me back. So I actually went through the second grade twice. In high school, I got involved with the city. And I started attending their city council meetings, and they needed a grunt for information. So I, at that time, the League of California Cities was in Berkeley. And I went down to League of California Cities and got all kinds of information. And I was at every city council meeting, giving them the information that they needed on everything that they could ask for, you know.
So politics was a natural for you.
They decided, Leroy Parr decided that they ought to make me city manager. So I believe I was 16 or 17. And they made me city manager, city woman. It hit the newspapers, and I think Sid Smith had something to do with it. Remember Sid Smith?
I do, yeah.
from Cedar Creek, and he was a state lobbyist for many years.
Mm-hmm.
Sid got it in the newspapers, and it came out in the New York Times. John Coburn, youngest city manager in the nation.
And, wow.
They paid me $1 a year. They never ever fired me or let me go. So every once in a while, I'll remind my city manager that they owe me $60 back.
Yeah, plus interest. Yeah. Wow. That was worth going back for.
Yeah.
Have you got a copy of the magazine somewhere?
Oh, I don't know.
No.
And then, after I left University of Utah, I had worked, my dad, Bud Murray, who was lived in Fiddletown, worked for H.L. Parker Construction. And he was the general superintendent on the road from the maintenance station above Peddler Hill.
Mm-hmm.
Down to the ranger station, which is about 8 miles, all the way through Peddler Hill, Bear River turnoff, and all that.
And the Red Lake grade. And
no, it's this side of Red
Lake. That's right, it's this side.
Yeah. It's from the maintenance station, this side of Silver Lake, not the other side.
Oh, okay.
There's a
I'm thinking of Woodsford's.
Yeah.
You're right. It's right up there, looking right at Twin Lakes is the one you're talking about, right?
No.
Nope. Down this
below
way.
That. There's
okay.
There's a maintenance station. There's a ranger station after 88 and Middletown Shakespeare Bridge coming
mm-hmm.
together. And then there was and you go on up the top of the hill there. Up past Hams, and up the top of the hill there, there was a ranger station. There's a road goes off there that goes down into Salt Spring, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
I was trying to think of the name of it. I can't remember. But anyway, he was superintendent up there. He was looking for his daughter. And his daughter Christine, he talked to my dad. He said, "Harold, if you give my daughter a job in your drugstore in the summer, I'll give your son a job in construction up here with me as a labor." So Christine, her sister Putter, we were talking earlier about how I got back and forth to school on a bus.
Mm-hmm.
Well, these girls decided everybody that was one student body president or anything in Amador or Ohio came from Cedar Creek or that area. That Pioneer Pine Grove wasn't represented or Plymouth wasn't represented. So these girls talked me in to run it for cheerleader with them in a high school bus. And so I ran with cheerleader for Helen Dennis, which is Jerry Dennis' wife.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And Butter Murray and them. We ran, and we came in second for cheerleader. So I wasn't a cheerleader in high school. However, I did get elected as the senior class president. I wasn't on the student body office, but senior class president. But anyway, so I went to work as a laborer up there with H.R.O. Parker. And they put me in picking roots. And a root picker, what you do, you got to go through the fill when they're bringing the material in, and you throw all the roots out to the side so that it doesn't contaminate the fill, the compaction.
Mm-hmm.
The fill. And they had 3 root pickers up there when I got there, and they couldn't keep up. Well, I decided it was my job to get those roots out. And back then they had cat and cans, you know, they didn't have the big scrapers.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd be running behind those cats. Just roots going everywhere, you know, throwing roots out. And then we would get into the rock area where there were no roots, so they put me out helping guy from Dry Town, I think his name was. He was a grade setter, and it taught me, put me out there helping a grade setter. And so I worked that season, and when it came back, they talked me into to joining the operating engineers as a grid center the following year. But in the interim, I went to college, and after I left University of Utah, I went to University of San Francisco. Now, I decided I was going to go into political science and then into law. That's where my interest was.
Yeah. That was pretty obvious at 16.
And there was, I was rooming with Bob Stephanie, a guy who is from Merced, whose dad owned mercantile stores down there and stuff, that was a very close friend of my cousin's. And we had a big tie with the whole Merced area, and we still do have big family names after one of my uncles was very instrumental in the funding of the Merced colleges there in Apple.
Oh.
And the Cunningham Road, the Cunningham name was well known, and the Stephanie name was not here. But anyway, Bob and I were rooming together. We walked down Market Street in San Francisco in 1960. We walked into the Kennedy headquarters. And that was the headquarters for Ted Kennedy. Ted was the West Coast campaign manager for John. And so we met him, not initially, but on a couple of times. We both dropped out of college and went campaigning for Kennedy. And we rented a car. Or no, we had Bob's dad a Plymouth. We got Bob's dad's Plymouth. It was a couple of years old. It was probably a 58 Plymouth or something.
Mm-hmm.
We had a PA system on it that we rented in San Francisco, and it was the guy had used it in aircraft. They used to broadcast down over cities for advertising. It's PR, came illegal, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They finally banned it, but he had this giant PA system. So we would go off to all the little burbs where we figured no speakers or anything would get there. And so we toured Northern California, Modoc, Lassen, all those little counties. And we
like Chester and Westwood and all those places.
We had a boatload of tie caps and cufflinks and posters and all
uh-huh.
that to Kennedy. If we had the carload of that stuff that we had back then today, it would be worth $1 million.
Uh-huh.
But we advertised throughout California. And I actually turned 21 on November 7th, 1960. That was the day of election, so I got to vote for Kennedy. I got to have my first drink, a legal drink,
mm-hmm.
and the first vote was for John Kennedy in 1960. So then I decided, well, I haven't got a mindset, you know, I'm going to college right now. I think what I'm going to do is work a year or two and then go back to college. So I, you know, from my experience up there, I joined the operating engineers. At that time, they didn't have an apprentice program or anything. You just learned from
my father was in the Local 3?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Local 3. And I worked one job over in Murphy's or Arnold for a couple weeks, and then that was when defunct. And I was on the board, and my next call was for Comanche Dam, which my dad had held up for a year and a half. It's kind of unique that I was there. But anyway, it was the same. I worked there for a year and a half till it was completed, working 60 hours a week.
Was that Bob Mitry did that? The contractor?
No, it was.
He must have done Lake Amador.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. No, this was Winston Green Construction.
Mm-hmm.
Out of the main Green was out of Canada. We had 21 660 scrapers running in there. We had about 15 650 scrapers that were new equipment at that time. They were massive haulers. We had about 15 belly jumps. And all that material came in with different classes. You know, they had a core, which was clay.
Right.
And then they had sand filters, and then they had a base filter, and then, of course, they ripped out the sides. And I was a grade setter on that, and I became the lone grade setter. And it wasn't much of a problem when you were down here at the bottom of the dam, but I had to keep all those zones straightened out, and as we went up, I had to stake them, and get the staking in the right place, and then, of course, build the slopes up on the outside. When you get up the top, I'd be running from one stake to the next, you know. And it was my worth ethic that made me so valuable there.
Mm-hmm.
I got drafted in the Army when I was on that job. And they had a big going-away party for me at the Sportsman's Club. They had a band and a big party. And half the work crew from down there was at my going-away party. The superintendent said, "John, if anything ever happens and for some reason you don't make it, I want to make goddamn sure you come back." So they had this bon voyage party for me. I went down to the induction center in Oakland, and they gave me a rejection, temporary rejection, because I'd had a lift in my shoes and I'd had a back problem. So back 4 days later, I was back.
For a welcome back party?
Yeah, and they called me when they found out I was back. They said, "Can you get back here soon? Because we got two guys doing your job now, and they aren't doing it right." So I went back to work for them. And then at one point in time, we got rained out. And I went to Lake Tahoe, and they called me about, my dad called, he knew where I was, he called Harris and paged me at 5 o'clock in the morning and said, "They called, I want you to work down here." I called the superintendent, and I said, "You know, I can make it down there, but I'm not going to be worth the damn, I've been up all night."
Yeah.
"And it's going to be 10 o'clock before I get there." "Well, you just take it off and come back in." So then, at that time, I was young and was chasing the girls,
mm-hmm.
staying up half the night, you know, partying. And I was in staying at home at my folks' house. I was in the second story of that house. I was riding to work with a guy from a local guy here in Plymouth. Well, it rained out one night, and they decided to work it the next night, and I'd been out partying all night or most of the night. He came and tried to wake me up. Come wake me up. Couldn't make enough noise that I'd hear him wake up. So he went to work, and he said, came back, and he said, "Well, they aren't very happy that you didn't show up for work." And I said, "Well, you know, they realized I was supposed to be at work when I was out partying." So he said, "Yeah, they called, and they replaced you." So the next day I went down to work, and I said, "Well, I decided to come back to work, but I need a raise." And my foreman said, "Yeah, you can raise your house right up to that office and get your checks." So I was off about a week and a half or something. They called me and said, "Are you working yet?" "No, I'm not working, but I got some pretty good prospects. I'll be going to work next week." They said, "You don't think you'd consider coming back?" I said, "Well, yeah, I guess I'll be there in the morning." And I finished out that job with them. And then I went in the Air Force Reserves because I had that rejection was a temporary thing. And my sister Marta had a good friend that was a lieutenant colonel in the Air Force, and he suggested that I go into there. He could give me an entry into the Air Force Reserves. So I went to McClellan, and I spent 6 years at McClellan.
In the reserves.
In the reserves, yeah. We did get activated for a short period of time when the Bay of Pigs was going on.
Mm-hmm.
But we really never got activated. But I was in there, and I was working construction. And I was doing real good. And what happened was I was making so much money in construction, I never did go back to college. And I worked several jobs. I worked two or three jobs on the California Aqueduct. I worked on I-5 for several sessions. It's kind of funny. I worked on I-5 in Tracy. I worked on the Aqueduct in Tracy. I worked on bypass coming from San Francisco in Tracy. I worked in the startup of the wind farms down there after I was on the board of supervisors in Tracy. So I spent about 10 years of work right there in Tracy. And
oh, you were on the board of supervisors in Tracy?
After I was on the board, I went down there and opened up that first wind farm. But anyway,
what happened? You were a board of supervisor here?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. That's right.
Yeah.
You just worked in Tracy?
Yeah.
For up to 10 years, you said, on and off?
Yeah, on and off. It seemed like it was close to 10 years.
So all your working and traveling didn't stop your political career?
No, what happened was I was working in Avenal on a canal down there. And I met a guy that was actually working for me. I was setting a grade, and we were doing canal work there. He was in a grade all business, and a grade all is an excavator, and instead of having a hoe boom, it's got a boom that rotates, so you can use it like a hand. You know, mm-hmm. You can grade the sides of
and
it rotates, and it's got a telescoping boom. So he ended up needing some money, and I loaned some money, ended up getting one of his grade alls, and ended up marrying his daughter. That's Jamie's mom.
Okay.
It's Dixie Maxwell.
Yeah.
So then.
Who still lives around here, right? I met her once or twice.
Yeah, she lives in River Pines.
Yeah.
So then I started in the grade all business. I had this equipment, so I had to get it going. And. I was very successful in it and started building. I had, at one time, I had 5 grade alls. And they were all used stuff that I bought and refurbished. You know.
Mm-hmm.
I had, at one time, I had 4 grade alls working on the San Luis Drain down south of Mendota. And came up, and it was draining that selenium water off the irrigation down there. And they got as far, it was going to go clear the bay, but they got as far as catching some wet reservoir, and it was creating deformity in the ducts, the selenium water, and they shut that whole thing down. But I spent a year and a half, 2 years down there on that. Very successful, got a lot of good work out of that.
Well, you were an equipment operator too, weren't you? Not just
I was
a grade setter.
I was running a grade all there. I learned to run a grade all. And because of my background of grade setting, I knew, you know, how when they brought out a set of plans for us to dig, I could see what we were trying to build, and that was a big advantage I had. I was in a group of grade all operators down in San Jose. There was about 8 or 10 of us down there. And the guy that's probably the best was a kid that I broke in. And after I got out of business, he went to work in San Jose. Anyway, he was sitting there and he talked and he said, well, you guys talk all you want about the grade all. And he says, number one operator, the best in the country, is that guy right there, Derek Coleman. And I got a lot of work because, you know, I did quality work. And,
mm-hmm.
But I was up many, many nights all night long, and ended up, I had operators who was making more money than I was because I was, you know, paying for all the equipment.
And the workman's comp. And
yeah, and all that stuff goes on and on. So I finally sold out. But it was during that time that my dad had been on the board of supervisors for 2 terms, I believe.
This was in the 50s. That he was.
This was, yeah. He was in the 50s, and then he was on again in the 60s for a period of time.
Yeah.
Dad was on the Board of Supervisors, and he was on the Fair Board for years. And there were some people that got upset about him for something that came down with the horse show. They weren't happy with the way the horse show was being
at the fair.
Yeah, at the fair. And they were local guys. And they talked Norm Waters into running for supervisor. Well, they crucified my dad. Just a bitter campaign. One of the things they got on Dad about, and they got in the newspapers and everything, and they had a big hullabaloo about it, was he took a vacation over to Africa to see a girl that they were sponsoring through the church that went on to become a nun. And they got on him because he didn't stop his Board of Supervisors pay while he was on vacation, which nobody did.
No.
And they used that as a big handle against him. Even with his vacation, he had a better attendance record than any of the other supervisors.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so he was beat by Norman Waters. He and Norman Waters became the best of friends. If Dad wanted anything, he had open door to Norm's office. Norm did a very, very good job after he stepped up to the assembly. He did an awful good job representing our area.
Yeah. Did you, then, did your dad go back when Norm went to the assembly, or was it then your turn?
Howard Kirkland came up here from Southern California, and Howard was in the water truck business down there, and his uncle was Walt Steiner of Steiner Road. Walt came up here pre-World War II. He came up, he had kids, and he wanted to get them out of the city. He lived in Long Beach. And he actually had an oil refinery down there that he built. He started out digging. The first job he had, they had a little farm, and these guys showed up across the road in suits, and he went over and asked them, you know, what they were doing. Could he have a job? And he dug the first outhouse for them. He became, or stayed with them, became a refinery engineer, and then built his own oil refinery.
Wow.
He moved up here, and my dad knew him. He was here when the first fair board, because Walt was on the first fair board. You see the picture in the director's room down there. It's got Walt Steiner on it.
Yeah, I've seen that, but I didn't know who it was, so it didn't mean anything. So.
Yeah, and he had
now
a,
it does.
He had a big, lavish place down in Long Beach with a downstairs basement as big as this. It was a casino. He had his employees over there almost weekly, and he had slot machines and beer and bars set up and down there and everything. But he moved up here. They actually built a little airstrip, and both of his boys were in the Army Air Corps in World War II. He lost them both over the English Channel. One in Germany and one over the English Channel.
Wow.
In World War II, and he only had two boys. And that was pretty tough on them. They adopted after that. But Walt Steiner's history is pretty colorful. So, but anyway, Howard moved up here. Howard had like 105 water trucks at one time. He got his start. He was in the Masons and had a few water trucks. And Guy F. Atchison got the major contract of reconstruction of the road from Bakersfield over to San Fernando Valley.
Mm-hmm.
Almost major. And Howard got a contract for all the water. The water trucks. And like I said, he had 105 water trucks at one time. And they, so then he moved up here, Howard did, and he ran for supervisor. Well, Howard was going to run Amador County like Long Beach was, you know. And he did a good job, but it was not well liked because he was over aggressive, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a ton of people after my dad, he had the drugstore still, to run for supervisor again. And I said, Dad, you've spent your time there, you know, 12 years. You don't need that headache to get back in there again. You know, somebody will run. So I was on an errand somewhere down the job, and he called me a couple times, and I said, "No, Dad, you don't need to be running." So he said, "Well, John," he says, "I've had a couple people ask about you, whether you might run for supervisor." And I said, "No, it's too much more of business." And so I came from Arizona the last day to register, and I walked into the drugstore up here where my dad was working for my sister. And I said, "Well, who's running against Howard?" He said, "Nobody." And I said, "Well, shit, I guess it's got to be me."
That wasn't the answer I was looking for, but yeah.
I guess it'll have to be me.
Yeah.
Well, Howard was under the impression that he was undefeatable. And he didn't campaign a lot. But I'd had, you know, background, politics, big name recognition. We made all our billboards and everything, you know. And one of the things I did, I went to virtually every door in the district and knocked on a door and talked to people. And I always thought that was, you know, real important to get out and shake hands and let people know, see who they might be voting for. Well, I won that election like 61-39%.
Whoa.
It was a landslide. So I went on in as a board member.
When you went on, it was Myron Questo, probably?
Myron Questo.
Fred Joyce.
Fred Joyce.
Myself, and Will Summers.
Will Summers.
And then who? There's one more. Sutter Creek.
That was Will Summers. Fred Joyce was from Elk Country. John Begovich.
Okay.
John Begovich. So anyway, I went on the board. It was, you know, new to me and very interesting. But one of the things that happened was the energy spiked. And
the first energy crisis?
Yeah.
So that would have been, you'd have been supervisor in 72?
No, 79. 78, I got elected.
Okay, so the second one, because there was one, remember the shortages of 73 when you...
Yeah. So, anyway, energy values got high, and I was, you know, familiar with the Roy Ditch and familiar with construction. We started looking at what is available in Amador County and surrounding area as far as energy, hydroelectric projects. And, of course, there had been a national project, which was actually funded in 1953, and that was a dam out here that was...
I know.
They had to put an 80-foot dam here.
Yeah. My dad used to work for Joe Vicini.
Oh, yeah.
And I'd ride over to Placerville to get his check, and he always told me, "I'm going to retire. The last job I'm going to do is on the Nashville Dam." And there hasn't been... he went in 86, and I don't think one rock's been turned yet, has it?
No.
So I know exactly where you're talking about.
And that dam site was, there was actually a Mount Ockham Dam, that dam, and Irish Hill Dam. The reason the road for Ione is where it is now, the old road went from Wake Station down, which is Willow Creek Road now, I
think. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Willow Creek.
It comes in down there. They moved the new road alignment up in order to be above the high water of Irish Hill Dam, which was part of that National Dam project.
Oh, it was one of the stepping stone things. Yeah. Build one dam and then build the next one. And
yeah. And they had power drops between them.
Yeah.
Biz Johnson finally torpedoed that job. He was the congressman for our area.
Yep.
And prior to that was Claire Engel. My dad and Claire Engel were very good friends. And Ms. Johnson said, there's not enough local benefit out of this project. You know, not enough water, not enough activities for the locals. And so it got shelved back in 1953. We redesigned that project, and I picked sites up higher where we got more of a hydro drop. We dropped the actual, there's to have an efficient management of a river, you need about twice the storage capacity as the average annual runoff. You can go higher than that, but it's costly. Niceville Dam had about five times the storage capacity as the annual runoff. But that was back when you were in 1953, when you were looking at cheap interest rates, cheap money.
Mm-hmm.
You can't afford to buy that kind of insurance today. So we redesigned it and made it it penciled out financially and based on the energy prices in 1990.
The county staff did? Or
it was
who is
basically
we?
It was myself and Lee DeLange and Gary Caldwell and then later
and those were all county employees?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So we formed the Consuming River Water and Power Authority, and then we had the Devil's Nose project that I handpicked, and we actually looked at projects over in Calaveras County. I reviewed the possible expansion of Part E. It penciled out pretty good. And a dam at this end of Part E, which would have been Middlemore Dam.
Mm-hmm.
It was a couple hundred feet. There's a good ridge in there that would have given us very good storage. So I was involved in all those dam projects. The Middle Bar project was one of the later ones we did, and we did that in conjunction with Calaveras County, and to file the FERC application. Calaveras County decided to do it in an open session. We had been doing it in closed session at the board because of the potential financial conflicts. And East Bay found out about it, that we were looking at the possibility of building a dam at the end of the party. I took our application, our Federal Energy Regulatory Permit, down to United Airlines in San Francisco and flew it out on a midnight flight. Unknown to us, there were engineers from East Bay on that same flight with their application, and they beat us because we had to have a carrier meet us. Ours back then.
And the time lag, yeah.
They beat us by 15 minutes.
Wow.
On a $500 million project, and that would have been a $2 billion project this year. So then we were having meetings among the Columbia River Association. These guys kind of hee-hawing me about they beat us out on that application. A couple of meetings later, I went in and I said, well, guys, I've got a new announcement for you. This morning, we just filed an application on a raising a Part E reservoir. And, of course, the general manager of East Bay was there and a couple of their directors. And the general manager was in shock.
He said, you did what?
I said, yeah, we filed for an application this morning on raising a Part E. He looked at his engineers there and he says, is that possible? Yeah, it's probably possible. Is it feasible? He says, yes, probably feasible. He says, where were we?
Yeah. What am I paying you guys for?
Where were we? And so I let it go on for about an hour, and I finally told him. I said, hey, guys, so just pulling your leg on the damn crazy part.
Oh, whoa.
But, you know, they did review that, and they were... And recently, they were going to try to raise it.
Three or four years ago.
Yeah, and then they got in conflict. Political conflict. The other project at that time that I had put together was the Devil's Nose Project. It was below Salt Springs, between Salt Springs and Tiger Creek power plant.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very good site, and there was sufficient amount of water in the river for that site. I was on the board, and we filed the application on it. And I was working. I had been down. I actually went and did a guest speaking thing at Metropolitan Water District in Southern California. And through that, I got I was invited down to Orange County and talked to them. And I got a close relationship with Orange County Neil. Can't remember his name, but anyway, Orange County, and they treated me like the king down there. I flew down on my dime, and they picked me up at the airport, and three of the directors drove me back to the airport, questioning me all the way back, and they were amazed down there that the problems we had with water, you know, and the problems that, you know, that we had with our supplies and what our needs were.
Well, I could see that from...
Yeah, and they said, you know, this is the most informative speech we've had on water issues since we've been here. But anyway, I got off the board and went to work for Fayette Manufacturing.
Did you run?
No, I didn't run again.
You just left the seat open.
Yeah,
and up to this time, with all of that you've done, you've never been a councilman for the city of Plymouth?
No.
You were the city manager, but yeah, never on the council.
Never on the council.
Okay.
So anyway, being on the Board of Supervisors was kind of a strain on my personal life. You know? It's like, you know, being on the council in Jackson, you can let it get to you. You can spend as many hours as you want trying to solve the problems.
And a few sleepless nights.
Yeah, and so it was an impact on my marriage, and so I decided that, you know, I was going to get it and get out. I went to work for Fayette Manufacturing, and that's where we did the startup of the first windmills on Alamont Pass. And we built all those first turbines in there and everything. And in the process, when I was down there, I went back to the board and I said, hey, you guys got to do something on that federal energy regulatory permit you got on Devil's Nose. And, well, you're going to lose it. So my requester said, well, John, you're the one that has expertise on that. Why don't you see if you can market it for us? And you put a contract together with of Finder Street. So I went and talked to Fayette, and they agreed to fund me at $1,000 a week. That was back in 1982. So, they funded me based on the Finder's fee. We were asking, as a Finder's fee, 0.5%. On hardware projects, you know, normally up to $10 or $20 million, 1% finder's fee. Anything below that is 3 or 4 or 5%. But
oh, I see.
Yeah.
The bigger the project, the smaller.
So anyway, the finder's fee was 0.5% at the time the project was financed. That would have been 8 or 10 years out, because they had to do all the engineering, the environmental, go through all that process, and it's, you know, it takes a long time. So, anyway, Myron, when I didn't run, I had announced my campaign headquarters was at the Plymouth Hotel. I had a birthday party there. I announced that I wasn't going to run. I told Kenny Devers. He'd been whispering. I'd been talking with Ronnie Kearns and some of those guys over there. And we were all you know, feeling this public service is over the top right now. And so Kenny was part of a couple of those conversations. He decided he might be interested in running, so I told him, I invited Kenny down and said, Kenny, I'm going to be making an announcement here. You might be interested in it. So anyway, I announced that with my supervisors and basically endorsed him. So anyway, on the Devil's Nose project, Myron talked me into entering that contract, and I did. And then Myron went down that airplane accident and got killed.
Yeah.
And Tommy Beamer came in. Well, I got Orange County Water District. They wanted the power out of the project because they had the overdraft in the Santa Ana River down there, and it was creating saltwater intrusion in the underground. So they were have a reverse osmosis, which is high in electric. And interjecting that water in to block the salt water. And they were at the mercy of Southern California Edison under power. So they wanted their own power supply. They were going to give us the water that project developed and build a dam only for the power. And they were on board. And I was busy working with them and everything. I went to make a report to the Board of Supervisors. And Kenny Deaver says, John, what's in this for you? And I said, well, we have a contract, Kenny. We get 0.5% at the time the project's financed. He says, well, goddamn, that's $2 million based on the estimate right now, $450 million.
I know that, right?
I said, yeah, I know that. Well, that's not a lot of money. I said, well, the hell, it's not for 10 years, and we'll probably might have close to that invested in it. I said, if that's doing the investing, we may, in 10 years, we may have close to that investment. Well, I think that's too much money. And so he talked, what's his name? My own, and I forget who else was on there, and maybe Will Summers was still on there.
Beamer?
Yeah. They talked them into breaking the contract and going to deal directly with Orange County Water District. So I went to my lawyers, and they said, John Hahn read the original agreement, and they said, well, look, this contract, I went to Martin McDonough. That guy was at my dad's friend. He was a top water lawyer in the state, and he says, well, it's a good contract for the county. It was a hell of a lousy contract.
For you, yeah.
But so you probably can't recover anything. So they broke the contract, and they contacted Orange County Water District, and I get a call from Orange County Water District. What the hell is going on up there? They said, do these people understand anything about the politics of Northern California and Southern California? What it takes and what it's involved, and when Southern California Water District comes up to build a dam in Northern California, what that stuff needs. It's, if you guys can't get them along amongst yourselves, how in the hell are we going to get them up there?
Yeah, how are we ever going to even get a permit?
Yeah, so they said, as far as we're concerned, we were dealing with you, and if you're out, we're out.
I could understand that position. I think I would have felt much the same way.
They contacted the county and told them no, they were no longer interested. And it was a tragic deal, because then the county went on to spend probably another $150,000 trying to market the dam and engineering and stuff on it. Finally, I told my niece Stephanie, who was on the board,
Marino.
Yeah, I said, yeah, it's.
So Deaver was a one term, and then she came on?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, I got the point. I said, you know, Stephanie, I don't think it's going to pencil anymore. You guys are spending a lot of money here on it was a great project. It would have worked when the energy values were high. It would have been a great project for us. And we tied it up there. among other things that happened when I was on the board, Myra and I were on the water committee, and we got wind that PG&E had given a ditch system over in Tuolumne County to the district over there. They were trying to get rid of the liability and the problems with
the maintenance and all of that. Yeah.
So we approached PG&E. It was Glenn Nix at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you know, what's the possibility of maybe we can acquire the ditch from you? So we had a couple of meetings in San Francisco with PG&E, and they agreed that they would just give it to us for a dollar.
The Arroyo Ditch?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No. Amador Canal.
Oh, the Amador Canal.
Yeah. And so Myra and I had the...
Oh, okay, that's right.
Myra and I had the responsibility of what we were going to do. Were we going to set Rod Schuler up and make him our water chair and us operate the Amador Canal? Or should we turn it over to the water agency? And I told Myron, I said, well, Myron, we didn't have much success with the negotiation by the Board of Supervisors on the Comanche Dam. Maybe we ought to turn it over to the agency. So we did.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the heart of what the agency's got now, is, you know, and I was instrumental in getting in that.
Mm-hmm. So. All right. Well, we got about 6 minutes left. John, come full circle. We're now back in Plymouth.
Yeah.
And you got on the city council?
I got on the city council, and that was the main issue there at the time was a casino.
And that was in 94? Because you've been, this is your third term you're on now, right?
In 16.
So that would be your fourth term, then, if you're...
That would be 94, would be your third term.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That would be the start of your fourth term.
Yeah.
Okay.
When they came to town, you know, first thing I said, how's it in your casino going to affect me or us? Or, you know, and, well, it's not going to impact me because I was 65 years old.
And you're just Joe Citizen now when you're asking these questions.
Yes. But then I start studying it, you know, what's happening down in Palm Springs with casinos there and some of the other casinos, and went down and talked to people, you know, to see what the impacts were. And I realized it was going to have a great impact on my family and my grandkids. And the Jackson Rancheria, I was actually on the Board of Supervisors when they got to, when we gave them their first agreement to put a bingo parlor out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I approved that. But after reviewing the impacts, the crime statistics, you know, we can see that right here in the county, you know, 13% of our inmate population comes out of that Jackson Rancheria, and that's not counting to and from.
Mm-hmm.
The fiscal impacts don't pencil out. They create some jobs, but most of it's low-end jobs. And they don't pay health insurance or any of those benefits. So we get a lot of those people back on our dole for medical and the rest of it. And I think a good example is at Jackson. And Jackson Rancheria hasn't done 10 cents worth of benefit to the business community in Jackson. You know, and they'd like to say, well, you know, they come in, you get all these people up here, they're going right by the wineries up there on Ridge Road, and the only ones that are stopping in there are the ones that think they can get a free glass of wine.
Yeah.
And they haven't benefited them all. And so I did, you know, did an economic review of them and looked at other communities where they had them. Just all in all, it didn't pencil out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And especially when they become sovereign nation and you can't negotiate with them in any way, as an example, 13% of the sheriff's budget would be $2.3 million. The sheriff, district attorney and all that, all the costs that goes along with the law enforcement and public defender and all that.
Right.
Would be $2.3 million. They're paying about $460,000 right now. So we're subsidizing. Taxpayers in Amarillo County are subsidizing at Jackson Ranch Rear by $1.7 million now. And they're doing their park projects, and they're doing donation fair and everything, and doing everything that's visible.
Yeah.
But won't sit down and, at the table and agree to pay for the costs that we're providing them for law enforcement. And the county's required here by California law to provide the courts and the law enforcement.
Right.
So I got involved in that. I was one of the founding members of No Casino with coming up, and then I ran for city council. That got me back into the Arroyo Ditch business.
Yeah, we could spend an hour on the Arroyo Ditch, I'm sure.
We could spend an hour on the Arroyo Ditch. The values are there for...
Maybe we'll do that another time.
Yeah. Just briefly, the value of the Arroyo Ditch water right, it's a larger water right than what we have off the McCallumy that serves all the Jackson and everything else. The rest of the county and Plymouth, our water right on the Arroyo Ditch is 23,000 acre feet. The original water right we got off the McCallumy was 20,000, of which 5,000 is reserved for Lake Amador. So the rest of the whole county has 15,000 acre feet, and we have 23. If you equate that to today's dollars, of course, we don't know how much of the total water right we have. If you equate that to today's dollars, that makes that water right value in excess of $100 million.
Mm-hmm.
So we've been trying to market, shop that water right, and lease it out in order to get, for 30 years, to get enough money to build a pipeline to pipe the ditch.
Yeah, that's the ultimate goal, is to pipe the ditch.
Yeah, we got 85% loss in that system right now.
Yeah.
So anyway, Pat, it's been interesting in reviewing,
remembering your history. Well,
yeah.
The people from 100 years from now are going to thank you for taking the time.
Well,
they know who the Colburns are and why it happened. And I learned a lot, John. I really appreciate you taking the time. And we did not mention, and I think we should, since your father brought the fairgrounds to Plymouth, that your daughter is now on the Amador County Fair Board.
Yeah, it looks like
you've got to be proud of that.
Got a heritage going. The daughter and the granddaughter is a queen, and granddaughter.
Right, the granddaughter is a queen. I forgot that.
And she set up a fundraiser for the fair this year, and actually went out and lectured all the fourth graders throughout the county on,
mm-hmm.
On the fair this year. So it's in the family.
Yeah, great family. And thank you again for your time. That was great. We were right on the money.